I'm Lauren Layfield, and you're listening to Your Next Podcast. This is the podcast that brings you a different series every single week, helping you to find your new favorite show. Okay, this is an absolute treat, this one. It's called Up in Smoke, and it's sort of one of those where the less I tell you about it, the better. What I will say is that it's a true crime podcast, and I say true with like inverted commas because it's actually not. It's not true. A not true crime podcast, if you will. It's all about a house fire that supposedly took the life of a young boy named Mason Miller, except his body was never found in the rubble. Our host is convinced the wrong man was sent to prison for his murder, and then things get spooky. It stars Mae Mack from the incredible stage production of My Neighbor Totoro and podcasting royalty Adam Buxton. And that is the last I'm going to say on the matter. Have a listen. This is Up in Smoke.
It's just after 2:30 a.m. on March 4th, 2014. It's snowing and has been for hours. Hidden under dense woodland, the English village of Greenlock is entirely cut off from the world. Beneath the howl of the wind, there is a roar of something far more sinister. A house is on fire. The house belongs to a couple named Otto and Lindsay Miller. They've escaped the flames and are pounding on neighbours' doors to help put out the blaze. More urgently, they are begging everyone to help them save their teenage son, Mason Miller. What you're hearing is a video from that night, filmed by me. You can tell I'm panicking. The camera is waving around. It's hard to follow. We see my wet socks running through the snow, other feet moving the same way. Eventually, I lift up the camera. Through the flames, the Miller family home is already a skeleton. Neighbours are bringing buckets of water. Lindsay, Mason's mum, is emptying them onto the fire. The steam scalds her. Her husband Otto can't watch. He turns away. And then, the house collapses. Fifteen-year-old Mason Miller would not make it out. But here's the strange thing. Mason's body was never found in the ashes. This is Up in Smoke, the strange case of missing teenager Mason Miller. I'm Kay McAllister. If you followed Mason's story at the time, you might know who I am. For those who don't, I happened to be living in Greenlock in 2014 when the fire happened. I was a regional reporter for a big national tabloid, The Meteor. I became a key journalist in the case because I was there that night of the Miller tragedy. Or, as the world would come to know it, the Miller murder. People are convinced they know who was responsible for this awful event. Since the night of the fire, I've never stopped following the story. I've collected years of recordings and seen things that, before now, have never been reported. Things that never came out at the trial. I want to prove the wrong man was convicted. To talk about evidence going missing, the so-called psychics that cared more about their own fame than the victims, and the video of a boy on fire. Fair warning from the start. I'll be going over some upsetting stuff and talking about some things that are hard to believe. Events that go beyond bizarre into something a lot stranger.
Stop filming.
This is a home video. Mason with his parents. He's standing by a grand piano in their living room. It's quite eclectic. Red wallpaper. The family's collection of niche musical instruments hanging off the walls. For a huge family home, the house was well hidden in the Greenlock forests. Walking nearby, you wouldn't even know it was there. Otto had bought a secluded plot of land in 1998. Otto had the house designed and built just for his family. He'd run an ice cream brand of all things called Miller Maid. He sold it in his 20s and made a lot of money very fast. The Millers were a big family in our community. They were famous for their extravagant musical dinner parties. When I first moved to Greenlock, they took me in. I lodged at their house for a while before I found my own place. They were generous like that, wanted to make me feel at home. Sometimes I'd babysit Mason.
2, 3, and... Hush, my babe, my little one. Thy father sails the deep, but warm thy bed is, pretty one. Lie still, my dear, and sleep.
Otto and Lindsay found out young that they couldn't conceive. Mason was adopted about a year after the Millers moved here. Floppy brown hair, a little introverted, an old soul. He had Supertramp posters in his room, which made his dad proud. His mom, Lindsay, managed the tourist office in Stone Eckham. That's the town closest to Greenlock. It doubled as a cafe, and locals would come in and see a young Mason, legs dangling off the counter. He was a smart kid, very academic, but it seemed like he was done with school early on, like it was holding him back. So his parents pushed him to do a lot of extracurricular activities. He picked up the viola. These lessons were his favourite. It was here that he'd get to know the man who would be convicted of his murder.
People paying their respects online after a tiny village, population only 97, went viral on Twitter.
999, which service? Ambulance, police or fire?
Hello, yes, I'd like to report a fire, please.
Lots of people sharing a video this morning of what looks like a devastating house fire, which has sadly claimed the life of one teenager.
As you can see behind me, the forest track up to Greenlock is completely snowed under. The track is narrow. Snow has blocked the way before, but never during an emergency. 3 hours in, and emergency services are still trying to dig their way through. Wind speeds exceeding 55 miles per hour, with all air support grounded.
Okay, I hope you can hear me. Kay here. I wanted to show you what it's like here. I think you can see it in the dark. It's pretty bad. No sign of Mason. No help from anyone yet. I know a lot of you are following my tweets. I'll update you as much as I can, but... yeah, this is my own community.
I live tweeted the fire that night, posted videos. I went viral. I'd accidentally created one of those freak stories about the death of a kid that takes off. A trapped community in the snow. No help. Excellent for the tabloid press. Not bad for me either. You could say being a neighbour, a close friend and a journalist became a very awkward conflict of interest. For the record, I'm not a newspaper journalist anymore. I publish a local magazine, mostly small business adverts and fluff pieces, where you skip halfway through past the ads to the actual articles. I don't want to bash the tabloid press, but this is a more honest lifestyle for me. Tonight, I'm going to a show. I'm late and it's raining. It's actually a book tour, but it's so popular they've sold out The Vessel, Stone Eckham's largest theatre. Stone Eckham's only theatre, really. The show is for a book called Mason and Me, The Greenlock Fire. It's by a guy called Dylan Michaels, famous young journalist turned author. He witnessed all the events in Greenlock in 2014, because at the time, he was my intern.
You've got a blow-up, haven't you?
Do you think? Oh.
Yes, a round of applause for puberty.
I sneak in, shuffle down the aisle to my seat. I don't think he spots me. Dylan was 17 when the fire happened, a couple of years above Mason at school. He told me they never spoke. He lived in Greenlock. He saw the fire, but he mostly followed me around that night, looking a bit lost. That's not what his book says, though. Tonight, he sat opposite an interviewer he hired for the tour. Behind them is a cheap easel, a school photo of Mason. It's a little tacky.
Well, for someone so young in their career, you really were in the right place at the right time, weren't you?
Yeah, I'd say there was a degree of luck. But knowing Mason like I did meant that people really trusted me to tell the story. I didn't want this to turn into a media circus, you know.
Well, you've really done the story justice in the book.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the book was needed, honestly. It's a definitive account of how something like this could really easily happen.
And to stop it happening again?
Yeah, absolutely. The whole thing stirred up a lot of conspiracy.
I swear he looks at me. After the show, I queue to get a book signed and say hello again.
Hi. Okay. Were you, did you come to the show?
Of course.
Right. Yeah, sorry for the,
It's fine.
You did not need to queue up with these lot. You're a special guest.
Didn't want to offend your fans, did I?
Are you recording? You're recording?
It's for a podcast.
Oh, you're in podcasts now.
It's about the fire. What really happened?
You're still doing this.
Well, so are you.
You seem better.
Seem better?
You want a copy, do you?
Dylan scribbles in a book and frisbees it at me. A fake smile that didn't reach his eyes. And I was ushered out.
Oh, great, thank you.
When I got to my car, I looked at what Dylan wrote inside my book. Don't take this too personally. I'm not going to take it too personally. Dylan can lie at his shows. He can't touch me here. His book reframes history, and I don't think it's defamatory to say that it only exists to serve himself. There are only a few people who know what really happened after the fire. That's the reason I'm making this podcast. Counter the narrative. Free an innocent man.
Thank you for calling His Majesty's Prison Service. HMP Longtide. For quality and monitoring purposes, this call may be recorded.
You fold the pillow in half and, well, then it's not so bad.
All right.
It's sort of helped it a bit.
Okay, cool. Let's just get some levels from you. Lawrence Goddard. Lawrence was the person put away for allegedly abducting and murdering Mason Miller. He's serving a life sentence in Longtide Prison. Lawrence was a teacher at Stone Eckham Academy, Mason's school.
Longtide Prison's first violin teacher. Just need to find the students.
Lawrence Goddard has spent practically every hour of his sentence convincing the wardens to let him teach. He's a persistent man.
The concern was that they'd garrote each other with the string. I do have quite the intimidating presence, you see.
At school, Lawrence was a character around campus. He'd dye his hair green every St. Patrick's Day. On the last day of term, he'd wear trousers he'd made with musical notes sewn all over. He was teased, of course, but Mr. Goddard was many students' favourite teacher.
Master Mason, he'd always be busy. A lot of lunchtime, after-school clubs. Well, because I was very close with the family, I sort of scheduled him like one of my adult students. Evening hours arrangement.
Lawrence taught Mason viola at home, after dinner and homework, late in the evening. This meant the night of the fire, Lawrence Goddard was the last person to see Mason alive. The police found texts between you and Mason in your phone, didn't they?
They did, yes.
For the listeners.
I understand.
Why were you texting Mason? Some would say you have parents for organising music lessons.
People have to realise this, how small Greenlock is. Otto and Lindsay, we were friends for years. With Otto, you know, they'd ask if I'd check in from time to time, keep Mason with the world, you see. Everyone looks at this with hindsight. Oh, I had a child's number. I must be a pedo.
Oh, hello.
Sorry. People coming by. But that's just not how it was. Without the context of all this, isn't it all very reasonable?
Lawrence mentions Otto there. That's the biggest tragedy of all of this. Mason's father, Otto Miller, was dying. The year before, he told us he'd been diagnosed with a terminal brain tumour, slowly growing for years undetected. He chose not to treat it.
He had trouble sleeping. He was rapidly losing weight. But he was still present. First the diagnosis, then Mason. Lindsay Miller was faced with the reality that she would soon be alone.
Time by my watch is 4:15 p.m.
3:26 p.m.
Full name for the record.
Please state your full name for the record.
It's Lindsay Miller.
Otto Miller.
Otto and Lindsay are interviewed separately.
I heard this bang, like something hitting the roof.
A projectile, you heard?
Sounded like it.
I saw all this smoke. I saw all this smoke above my face moving around.
I thought I could hear Mason calling from downstairs.
Did you see which room the smoke was coming from, Mr. Miller?
Couldn't see anything.
I checked for Mason in the kitchen. I thought he got out.
He was still in his bed.
I should have just checked. Maybe the fire, I don't... All I had to do was check his bloody room. Would have taken seconds.
March 4th, sunrise. The blizzard continues. The Miller home looks gruesome. A small drone is buzzing overhead. No one can work out who's flying it. The wind picks it up and blows it off into the quarry. Nobody claims it. Otto and Lindsay are still here. Dylan and I are interviewing the neighbours. Suddenly, Lindsay throws off a foil blanket and wades into the ashes. She scrapes through the burning rubble with her bare hands, calling for Mason, berates us all for not doing enough. It's heartbreaking to witness. She's quickly pulled out by two others. The snow has turned the ash into searing sludge. Lindsay would lose three of her fingernails. Otto doesn't notice. He's sitting propped up under blankets against the white gate, the only piece of the house untouched by the fire. As Lindsay is led away, Dylan discreetly takes a picture of her, her hands out, face contorted. This well-known photograph would become the first of many pictures to be sold around the Miller case. Dylan was going to go far. But I can't give Dylan all the credit.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for all your messages and retweets. I'm getting a lot of media requests at the moment, but I wanted to film this little update video for you. If I pan around, this is what the scene looks like this morning. I'm here with Lawrence Goddard, who has taken the Millers in for the moment.
Good morning.
Lawrence, any ideas on what happened here?
Well, I wish I knew. I was teaching the young Mason just last night, and all seemed well.
Otto Miller told me he heard something hit his roof last night. Could it have been arson?
I believe it's too early for any speculation like that. Right now, all I care about is finding Mason safe and looking after the family.
Finding Mason? You surely can't think that he...
Oh, goodness, Kay.
I mean, I'm just asking. How likely is it really that Mason will be found safe at this point?
I'm going to cut myself off here. In 2014, my ethics as a journalist were a little different. You can hear my goading for an angle. To be honest, this is another reason why I'm worried about people reading Dylan's book, what they'll think of me. But as much as I hate doing it, over this series, I'm going to give you an honest coverage of the time. This involves me playing some clips of myself, like the one you've just heard, that I would prefer stayed buried.
The storm has finally cleared. Police, fire and ambulance crews are now able to make their way up to Greenlock, but sadly, far too late.
March 5th, over 24 hours after the fire. Emergency services are tailed by a caravan of national TV crews and newspaper journalists. Many aren't too pleased to see me. I see a familiar face, but not a friendly one.
OK, we're going to need to clear this whole area. Can we clear this area, please, everyone? Everyone out. Thank you. We're going to need the space.
Get that tape up.
It's DCI Roy Burgess, Stone Eckham Police. I don't think I'd ever seen him in a tie. As a reporter, we'd worked closely together, passing info between each other. We'd become good acquaintances, the level just beneath friend. This morning, not so much.
Roy! Roy!
You should go home.
Neighbours bring hot tea and biscuits. Reporters soon chase them back into their homes. At this point, the Miller fire was still seen as just a tragedy. I had no idea what was to come.
From Penny 4, this is Up in Smoke. Written and directed by Guy Larson and Cambria Bailey-Jones. Our editors were Dan Pugsley and Guy Larson. The studio producer was Gabriella Jones. Theme music by Tom Larson. Mixing and sound design by Dan Pugsley and Cassini Sound. Our script editors were Gabriella Jones, Peter Fellows and George Riley. Casting by Sydney Aldridge. Viola by Abby Dance.
Kay McAllister was played by Mae Mack. DCI Roy Burgess was Adam Buxton. Lawrence Goddard was Alan Corduna. Lindsay Miller was Tracy Wiles. Otto Miller was Andrew Cayley. Mason Miller was Huey Enkelman. And Dylan Michaels was Preston Nyman. Additional voices by Jessica Bracey, Cambria Bailey-Jones, Guy Larson, Alex Gill, Terry Bailey, Charlotte Gay, and Julian Bailey-Jones.
Music by Alan Peretz, Maya Bell Sitzman and Matan Efrat, Dear Gravity, Ziv Moran, Rex Banner, Shahid Mustafafar, Ardy Sun, Rob Corley, Max H, Theatre of Delays, NC, Zid Akaria, Josh McCausland, and We Dream of Eden, courtesy of Artslist.
Special thanks to London South Bank University, Janet Jones, Tiffany Whitney Chang, Joe Tyler, Ash Horn, Gregory Williams, and South London Theatre. You can follow Up in Smoke on Instagram. We're at upinsmoke.podcast. This was a Penny 4 production.
Isn't it great? Episode 2 is out right now, and you can just keep listening if you're already hooked, which I am. Just before you go, follow your next podcast right here. I've got loads of great podcasts coming up in the next few weeks that I don't want you to miss. And you can find all my recommendations, along with news, reviews, and loads more, on Podcast Rex at www.podcastrex.com. That's www.podcastrex.com.